didn't catch that, this entire sutra is literally about three ways of practicing. I mean, as we just talked about that for 2 weeks. It's like, holy cow, these three ways of practice. So now they're saying that if we were to analyze them, isn't that what we just did? No, apparently not thoroughly enough. Oh, well then, if we do a deeper analysis of these three ways of practice, they break down into a whole bunch of stuff. A gigantic list. Okay, let's take a look at what this means. I'm going to try to target this mainly towards the folks in the Missouri and those that live even the more far south than the Missouri. Anybody know? Well, you guys will. But you guys that are not in the Missouri, there's some of you in California, there's some that are here in the Minnesota. You guys know what sweet tea is? Well, that's because you guys are from Missouri. Listen, I never even heard of it until I moved there. We didn't have that in San Diego. Our teas are like yerba mate. You know, we have all these South American, Peruvian, and Mexican teas. We don't, you know, sweet tea. What? Okay, or we have what we call sun tea. That's what we have, sun tea. We have a lot of that in California, but it's not sweet. If you have a gallon of sweet tea, and we say we have a gallon of sweet tea, Droma, you need to mute your mic. No, really, you do. I know Madeline doesn't want to, but you have to mute that. There we go. Okay. If we take a gallon of sweet tea, if you know how to make it, it's made of three things. What's the first ingredient? Water. Yeah, you got this water. Sugar's number two. Because there's like, wow. Right?
Some of them, it's like, that's
it's like your teeth fall out because you take a sip of this stuff. And the third ingredient is a tea. I know that sounds crazy, but there is tea in it. So there's three things. Three ways of practice. There's three things that make up this team. Now, if we break this down, meaning we really look at it, we can begin to analyze water. Now, all of a sudden, we have how many hydrogen?
Two.
And how many oxygen?
One.
And they're bonded together that makes this water. So that becomes a list. Then if we add in all of the various iron and chlorine and fluoride and everything else in our water, we have an even bigger list of what our water is, right? Tashi's over there going, yeah! All that crap coming out of the faucet. You got it. So, in addition to all this mineral and everything else in it, it becomes a big list. Then we look at the sugars. Hoping that you're not using some kind of organic pure cane sugar, that you're using some highly processed, high fructose corn syrup, like a real good sweet tea would, then we have all kinds of... What, do you even know what that's... Just mass amounts of chemical process, right? To make that? Okay, so now we have a big list of chemical processing.
Some of it's even made with bone char.
Yeah, some of it's even made with... Yeah, I don't even know what that means. I don't want to. Right? And so now we're going to then look at the tea. And when we look at tea, assuming that you're using Lipton, non-organic, you know, completely probably not even a real plant. Now we have a giant list that are three ingredients just expanded out to. So now we have to become chemists in order to gather all of these crazy kinds of chemicals and such in order to put them together in the right way so that we can produce a bottle of brisk sweet tea, which is completely fake tea. Now, I'm using that example because this makes it easy to explain how three ways of practice are broken down into this massive list. Droma, is your mic back on? Turn that off.
Is it on?
Yeah, you're talking to me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Mute yourself.
Is this good?
No.
You're still talking to me.
Damn, how did I turn it off?
I don't know, because we can hear it banging around in your purse and in your pocket, and we can hear...
Oh, I'm sorry, I thought it's off. Hang on.
Yet. Now, that sounds like Nichivo. This is good. All right. No, there's... I heard that. Okay. So, our list really expands out. But the whole point is three items. You see, when we go to the store, we're only concerned with getting three things. We need some tea, we need a jug of water, and we need a whole huge bag of sugar to make our sweet tea. Those are three things we need. And we're going to make it so that it what? Quenches thirst. That's our ultimate goal. Our ultimate goal is to attain enlightenment, to overcome suffering. We are concerned with three ingredients. Just three. We don't necessarily need this whole big list. The whole big list only comes out of analysis. We as practitioners just need to know these three things right here. Which is discipline, concentration, and wisdom. If we're confused on what those are, the discipline is following your precept, gaining control of your five senses. Concentration means that you should be focused on the mind clearly. That means basically paying attention to or being aware what the mind is doing. What is it thinking about? What emotions are arising that the mind is toying with? You know, they're like playmates. An emotion comes up and the mind then courts it. Or the mind comes up with thought which causes an emotion to arise, and then they court each other. They play this game of tag. Our job is to pay attention to that, be aware of what's going on in here. This mind, not this one. This one doesn't need a whole lot of that. You get to pay attention to this when you have control of this in the senses. Then you become aware of the heart mind. Little different. In doing those two things, you're not even concerned with wisdom at all. And very interesting. Look, we're not concerned about water. Well, I mean, some of us are. But in the scenario of making the sweet tea completely unorganic, we don't care. And there's not a lot that we have to pay attention to in the water. We're just going to put it in the pot. The sugar and the tea take that takes some doing. So to do the sugar right, we have to like concentrate on the sugar, like how hot the water is going to be, how much we're going to put it in, and how we're going to stir it and make our simple syrup and all of this kind of stuff. And the same thing happens with the working with the tea. How much tea we're going to put in, what temperature the syrup will be at, when we add it so we're not scorching the tea, and so on and so forth. It becomes this huge complex thing. But there's only two things we're concerned about. How and when to add the sugar, how and when to add tea. If we do those two things precisely by paying attention, what byproduct do we get? Anyone know?
Sweet tea.
Sweet tea! So the third thing, we don't have to do anything about. We just pay attention to sugar, we pay attention to tea, and it comes out sweet tea. We pay attention to our discipline, we pay attention to concentrating on the mind, and the wisdom just happens. It's the byproduct. We don't have to measure anything out. We don't have to test anything. It's just bang, there it is. I went from creating a simple syrup, throwing in some tea at the right time and the right amount, and holy cow, sweet tea just appeared in my giant pot on the stove. Just like that. Which, by the way, it's 1 gallon water, 1 cup white sugar. You stir that in to create a 1 gallon vat of a simple sugar. Basically, that's what it turns into. Turn off your fire once the sugar is dissolved. Put a temperature gauge in and wait for the water to cool down because it was at boiling, which is 212. You cool it down to 180. Once it gets 180, you put your 4 to 5 tea bags in and let it steep, no heat. Don't turn the fire back on. See, now you guys know how to professionally make sweet tea. That was our recipe in our restaurant. When I used to run a restaurant, this is how we made it. And I got this recipe from some guy from Alabama. Now, if you guys don't know, they're further south than the Missouri. So they really know about sweet tea, right? Because any further south and they fall into the Gulf of Mexico. They're in the water. That's as far as down as you can get. Unless you go way east and then you can like cheat and go down to Florida. But then that turns into a whole different thing. So, just for the fun of it, let's take a look at some aspect of breaking down the sugar a little further. Not that we really need to, but we're going to. Why? Because the Eightfold Path is something that is rather important. And of course, we're going to look at the other list, but this one is something that I really want you guys to know. The Eightfold Path is really something that we should know. We don't necessarily need to commit it to memory. But the thing that's very nice to do for the Eightfold Path is maybe get yourself a nice piece of paper and get a quill and some good ink and do some calligraphy and write out the Eightfold Path and then put it on your refrigerator like you're a kindergartner that just made some art. Why? Because the Eightfold Path is actually very important. And when Shakyamuni Buddha would ever talk about the Four Noble Truths, he almost always added the Eightfold Path to follow it. So he would say, Here's the Four Noble Truths about everything. And a good way to accomplish this is this Eightfold Path. So the Eightfold Path is rather important. Not necessary to memorize, but it's a very good guide. What am I doing with myself? Well, take a look at this Eightfold Path. So the first one, and what we want to talk about here is the word right. Those of us in the West have a very clear opinion of the word right. And it means the thing that is absolutely opposite of wrong. Our view of right means if we are right, we can sue those that are wrong. If we are right, we can imprison those that are wrong. If we are right, we can punish the wrong. That's not what right means here. That is not the definition of right. In fact, the word right here in the sutra refers to organic. That which abides with nature. So last week, I think I talked about Steve Hagen's talk of the leaf on the tree. You know, that it doesn't curl up into a ball and then plummet to the ground in a cannonball form. It just gently lets go and just kind of floats wherever the wind takes it. That's the right method. Why? Because that's the most natural, organic way for a leaf to fall off a tree. So when we are talking about right view, it is the most organic in abiding with nature view that we can have. Means it's not perfumed or tainted by any kind of an opinion or an egomaniacal point of view. It doesn't have story attached to it. It's rather enlightened. So right view means that we have to understand, of course, Four Noble Truths. If we don't clearly understand Four Noble Truths, I'm not exactly sure how the Buddhist path is going to work for you. Because all of the teachings are founded on these four principal things. If you don't understand any one of those principles, then the rest of the teaching is really just not going to make that much sense. Not when they're well analyzed. Or you will gain what's called a wrong view, which is one that does not abide. It's forced. It is, I can't think of that word, but there's a really good word for when something is coerced. Well, so there are a couple things that we need to know about having this or creating a right view. And right view is not something that we snap ourselves into. Oh, I need to have right view. No, what it should be is we should take each one of these supports. Okay, so there is the support of understanding the Four Noble Truths. There is the support of understanding cause and effect. And there is the support of outer sense data. Understanding the structure of outer sense data. So these are the three supports to having right view. So here's how we approach it. We pick any one of those three, and we study it. And we try to understand the meaning of any of these three. And not just, okay, I get it. It means this. That won't work. We have to look at it and say, it's teaching this, but what is it that I have believed throughout my life and base my existence on? Because your actions are based on a specific motivation of a belief that you've had. Therein lies the problem. So to say, oh yeah, I understand the Four Noble Truths, academically you see why it won't help. Because academically, understanding something will not cause a motivation for you to act upon a academic understanding. Motivation for action only arises based on belief. Belief. Anyone afraid of heights? Anyone? A little bit, okay. Anyone afraid to be on a boat out in the ocean? Anybody done that? I mean, pick a fear. Fear of flying? When you find something that you're afraid of, like people that are afraid of heights, they're afraid to go up on really high bridges, or they're afraid to go up really high in a building, they're afraid to climb up a ladder. The reason why the fear arises is because they do not have a belief that the thing is going to support them. If we want to throw around the word faith, because we live in the West, that's kind of how we use the word faith. It's like that. I have no faith in this ladder. I have no faith in the weight limitations of this building, saying that the building can hold 26 tons before there might be any structural problem, and I only weigh 150 pounds, which is very close to 26 tons if I'm climbing this building. Right? Because now we don't trust the building because, holy cow, I weigh 150 pounds. Maybe that's going to make the building collapse. You see, it's absurd. It doesn't matter about the academics. It doesn't matter about the scientific proof that this ladder can hold 550 pounds. You don't weigh 550 pounds, so it will not collapse. But that won't matter. Why? Because we have a belief in something else. So we will behave based on our belief, not based on the scientific evidence. Buddha says that the Dharma is scientifically proven. But what you have to do as an individual, and it's actually not my job. This is the cool part about my job. And I'm speaking on behalf of all the ordained. It is not the ordained's job to make you believe in something. Our job is to present you with evidence and then for you to do it. I gave you the recipe for sweet tea. Are you all masters at making sweet tea? Probably not, because you haven't done it, even though I gave you the scientific information to do it. I told you exactly how to do it, but you haven't practiced that information. Which means, if you go home and you invite some people over and you say, hey, we're going to, you know, have a... We're going to have a southern-style afternoon tea, serving sweet tea, and I actually don't know anything about southern etiquette, so I have no idea what that means. But let's just say you're inviting people over for sweet tea in a checkered tablecloth, okay? That's about all I know of the South. So, it's your first time making it. You're probably going to be very nervous about it. Why? Because you won't have the belief that you're a master. Enter Dharma. You want the right view? You have to take this scientific information and you have to study it and test it and apply it until it becomes your belief system. Until that is in fact what you believe. For a long time growing up, because of the types of religions that I was raised in, I did believe in a soul and a creator God. And when the Buddha said something different, and I tested it and researched it and did everything I needed, I do not hold that belief today. I mean, at all. There's not even a shadow or a remnant of it. And so no action, no thought, and no speech that I have is ever founded or grounded from that perspective. I absolutely do not believe in a creator God. I absolutely do not believe in soul. Those concepts to me are as real as somebody telling me that the moon is made out of cheese. That's ridiculous. But this is because I have approached Dharma in this way. Four Noble Truths. Do you believe in something else other than the Four Noble Truths? I mean, the first one's pretty easy. Suffering exists, and I don't think anybody really argues that one. But we may argue, number two, the cause of it. So Buddha says that we're the cause. But we may not want to believe that deep down inside. We may still want to put blame on outer things. And we may say, oh, Venerable so-and-so, of course I believe in Four Noble Truths. Really? Buddha says, here is the method to overcome this. There is a method to overcome it. We may agree with three. One and three are the easy ones. Yeah, we do believe absolutely suffering exists because we feel it all the time. Number three is, of course, there's a way out of it. Two and four are the ones we don't like. Two is that we create our suffering, and four is, here's his specific method. Well, we don't necessarily want that specific method, and we don't want the ownership. But we may go, oh, of course, Venerable, I believe in the four. Really? If you did, you would approach this stuff like that. All of your thinking, all of your activity would be coming from a belief in these things. The next one is the belief in the law of cause and effect. And it's really great because the word believe is actually in the sutra. Buddha does not say to understand that. He says you have to believe in it. This is a fundamental aspect of Buddhism. The shooting of the arrow, and the arrow cannot be called back. And that will impact the way that we act. If we do not believe that there are consequences for actions, or we think we can somehow escape them, or that we can, you know, negotiate out of them or around them. You see? We may say, well, of course I believe in cause and effect. But deep down inside, we have this weird belief, this weird idea, that we're not going to have to pay for it. You know, I bet I can get enlightenment before this happens to me. Ouch. Actually, Buddha says that doesn't work that way. Even once you attain your enlightenment, your old karma still ripens. Buddha says, for a fact, there is no escaping effect. Absolutely no escape of it. And he demonstrated that after his enlightenment, he had all kinds of problems. Loads of them. People trying to assassinate him, getting sick, eventually dies from food poisoning. He was haunted with migraines. I mean, he had all these huge problems. As an enlightened one. Not exactly the poster for enlightenment. What we would like to hear is you get enlightenment and it's a heroin trip the whole time. Everything's just smooth sailing and, you know, just... And you can just be lazy and just be on the couch going, drooling all over yourself because there's nothing that's going to happen. But that's not enlightenment. Enlightenment is still having to pay bills, still being in problematic relationships, problematic jobs, problematic food, problematic everything. That's enlightenment. The body failing us. Dogs still crapping in our front yard. And us stepping in it. Forgetting how to make sweet tea and then inviting people over and panicking. Oh my God, I don't know what he said. We just actually did that. Not with sweet tea, but I was attempting to make a green curry coconut tofu dish that just turned out to be absolute garbage. And I invited people over. Right? Oh, look, we're going to make this great meal. They come over and it was... And they were just like, you used to run a restaurant? Who the hell would eat there if this is how you cook? Anyhow, that didn't really happen. I was just paraphrasing. But, listen, that's it. Enlightenment is still all of that. It's still all of that. And the last aspect of having this right view is that we're not deceived by appearance and our desires. So we got one out of the eight today. I thought that was pretty good. Next week we're going to finish the first one because we still haven't finished it because I want to talk about what this means to not be deceived. So if somebody would remind me next week, what does it mean to not be deceived by appearance and desire, according to right view? And then I'll say, ah, yes, excellent, excellent, for asking this question for the benefit of all sentient beings, that they may be liberated from incorrect view, and that they may have a solid pillar of understanding and insight in order to gain right view. And then I'll give the discourse on it. I probably won't remember any of that verbatim. So hopefully that got recorded. Otherwise that's lost. Okay. That's all I've got for today. Because I think we're way over. No, we're not. It's 11:01. Right on the nose. We're going to go into... doing some meditation stuff so we can sit there and look at this.